Hello, welcome back to Tech Day's online DevOps edition. This is the last session of the day, folks. It's been a really, really great day. I want to say a big thanks to watching from people all around the world, but we've saved the best to last. I'm really, really pleased that, with me, by the power of technology, all the way from stateside, personal hero of mine, I asked him how he'd like to be introduced, and he left it up to me. So here we go. The man, the myth, the legend, Brian Harry.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Yes, I'm in North Carolina right now, presenting from my office. It's an honor to be speaking to you all, and thanks a ton for attending. So today I'm going to kind of wrap up with a bit of a story of our DevOps journey and kind of the things that I think are the key elements to DevOps and where we are on that journey and what kind of lies ahead of us. So I was going to start, I suspect this has been covered, but I just wanted to kind of baseline, what is DevOps all about? Like, what are we trying to do with DevOps? Not so much what are the individual activities, but what's the purpose? So in my own words, the purpose of DevOps is about streamlining the process of developing and delivering software. Classically, it applied to servers and services, and increasingly, it's also being applied to mobile. It really doesn't matter what kind of software you're doing. It's a philosophy about how you organize your software development in order to increase the flow of value, so you're delivering more and more value to your customer in a continuous stream of value, rather than these sort of large episodic events where you ship something and then nothing happens, and a year later you ship something else. It's also about shortening cycles to improve agility. So rather than having these sort of monolithic things where you decide what you're going to do and then go do it, and by the time you've done it, nobody remembers why you decided you were going to do that. But really being very agile and reacting very quickly to customer feedback and delivering in these very rapid cycles from time of idea to time of software in customers' hands. In fact, we often talk about the time from idea to telemetry. How long does it take from the time I have an idea until I'm actually getting telemetry back from users using that idea and telling me, is it working, do they like it, etc. And then lastly, it's about delivering quality, because there's this tension. The faster you want to go and the shorter you want your cycles to be, you have to be very thoughtful about how you manage quality in that process. Otherwise, all you're doing is figuring out how to ship more bugs to customers faster. And nobody wants that. Certainly your customers don't want that. So at a high level, to me, that's what the goal of DevOps is. And there's a bunch of activities around DevOps that sort of help you manage that software development process, from planning. How do I manage my project? How do I decide what I'm doing? And, you've got Scrum, you've got Kanban, you've got a variety of agile project management strategies that have sort of broken with the old waterfall, decide what I'm going to do, cost it, estimate it, design it, architect it, kind of all that upfront stuff, then go build it, then go stabilize it and deliver it. So that's one very important phase of executing on DevOps. Then there's kind of the collaboration on code part of DevOps, which is really around how you manage the team of developers working together, reviewing each other's work, sharing code, etc. There's the problem of technical debt. In any time you're executing fast, there's always this pressure about delivering the next customer value, the next feature that customers want, responding to the next need. And if you're not careful, that drive to constantly deliver more customer features will cause you to build up debt. Stuff in your code that is kind of old and crusty and makes it sort of maybe you designed it one way and then later realized that that's not quite the way it needs to be, and you sort of half changed it and left it in this sort of fragile state, or maybe you haven't paid as close attention to coding convention or security practices or whatever in order to get going, and you've left this debt that you know you have to deal with, but it's always hard to communicate exactly what the value of that is and measure how much it is, how long it's going to take, sort of figuring out how to handle all of that stuff that's not about directly visible day-to-day customer value, but in the long term plays itself out in performance, in reliability, in security, in maintainability, and future velocity. That's technical debt. Continuous delivery. I think you've had some talks today about continuous delivery, and that's really about getting those bits from the developer into a production environment, whether that's a server in the cloud, a server in your enterprise, or a device in thousands of people's hands or millions of people's hands. It's fundamentally about how do I streamline that process of getting that software out there into customers' hands. And then lastly, what we call application insights, which is really about telemetry. How do I get telemetry back from my applications, from my users, to understand how the application's behaving? Is it performing? Is it reliable? Are users using the features that I think they're using? You know, did I just build something and nobody's using it? If I did, why? And what do I need to do to get the users to use it? Or did I just choose a bad feature and I need to just kill that feature and move on to the next thing? All of this is about understanding what's happening in your application. And this whole cycle, you know, we would have historically talked about in months or years of process. And now people are executing this entire cycle in weeks or days, some cases hours for very small things. But being able to come up with a hypothesis, build it, get it shipped into customers' hands, collect telemetry from it, understand if it's working, and then either double down on it and continue to invest in it, or pivot and decide to work on something else. So high level, to me, that's what DevOps is all about. And then when I think about our DevOps solution, one of the things that's very important about it is that we strive to have it be an open platform that you can plug any tool into, will support any platform, whether you're doing iOS development or Android development or Windows or Linux or Java or PHP or Node or whatever. You need a DevOps solution that covers all of your various technology stacks, because almost any meaningful application today is very heterogeneous. It's got a bunch of pieces, open source pieces on different technology stacks, client, server, device, and you need solutions that tie all of that together. All right, so I was going to spend a few minutes talking about our journey, because DevOps, if you're kind of a company that has been doing software development, thus, you know, it's sort of a similar way for a long time, transitioning from kind of a waterfall culture into a DevOps agile culture is a massive transformation. Doesn't happen overnight. And I often sort of people will come and say, because I tell the story of how we've gone through this transformation and are going through this transformation a bunch, and people come and, you know, ask, how do you do it? What do we need to do? And my first advice to them is, don't try to do everything at once. It's too much. You need to kind of manage through the cultural transformation and build into your processes, because it's not just about tools. I mean, I could throw all the tools at you that you could need, but if you don't have the processes and the culture to use those tools, then they aren't going to do anything for you. So you really need to focus on that, and then the tooling merely supports the process and cultural changes that you want to make. So when I think about our journey, and I go back now 5, 6, 7 years when we started our transformation. The first step we took was Agile Project Management, and it's the thing I recommend to everybody because it is really about adopting that agile, iterative, incremental planning combined with execution mentality. And whether you use Scrum or you use Kanban or you use something else, I don't care. I don't think it matters. There are people who are passionate about one sort of one approach versus another. I think it's the underlying principles that matter. So, you know, when we started, we adopted Scrum and we took our entire organization and put them through Scrum training and adopted Scrum tooling. And like the first three sprints that we did were total waste. Like we got nothing done because nobody knew what they were doing. You know, it was an entirely new way of working. There were tons of things that we had to come to grips with, like questions that we used to ask, like, you know, what percentage of the project is done, become meaningless questions when you adopt an agile methodology, because there's no such thing as done. There's just a backlog. And in any meaningful project, the backlog is infinite. So what percentage of infinity have you gotten done? None. It's a constant stream of work. And you can talk about how much work you've gotten done. You can talk about how fast you're getting work done, the velocity. You can talk about a bunch of interesting and useful things, but you can't think about it the way you used to do it. The work is this much. I've gotten 40% of it done, you know, but 50% of my time is burned off. I'm behind schedule. Doesn't work that way. Huge cultural transformation to go through. So that was sort of step one for us. You know, we were making this cultural transformation at the same time we were transitioning from a sort of an on-prem box product that shipped every 2 years or so to a cloud service where we knew where we were headed was very, very frequently shipping. In fact, we set a stake early on that we were going to ship every week. That was our North Star. We were going to get to the point that we were able to ship every week. And at the time, we were shipping about once a year. So it was a massive North Star shift to aim towards. The Agile Project Management thing was one step. Now, we didn't, you know, try to ship immediately to every week. We implemented Agile Project Management on yearly cadence, and then we, you know, gradually shrunk that to about every 5 or 6 months, and then every 2 or 3 months, and sort of gradually moved down. The next thing that we came to is the realization that if we were going to ship that often, you know, the way we'd historically thought about setup and, you know, and install and configure as these things you only do every once in a while became super clear that was not the way to think about it anymore. You know, if you're going to adopt this very agile cloud cadence way of working, you've got to be able to deploy super fast and with very little effort. So our kind of next big investment in the team was really thinking through how do we automate that process of release and dealing with the fact that every release is an upgrade now. Like the whole idea when you're sort of running a cloud service of, you know, install and uninstall and things like that. Well, you never uninstall, and you only install once, the first time. Every time after that is upgrade, and the service can never go down. So, because we got people all around the world using it, and there's no time of the day or week or month that you can say, oh, you know, Sunday nights at 3 a.m. is a good time to take the service down for 6 hours, because Sunday nights at, you know, for 3 a.m., you know, for me is actually Sunday afternoon for Israel. And by the way, Sunday's a work day in Israel. That doesn't work. You can't ever take the service down. So we invested very heavily in how do we automate the releases? How do we manage sort of always up upgrades? A lot of sort of component versioning contract work to understand how you manage when in a production environment, I've got, you know, version one of one component and version two of another component, and I'm upgrading them out of sequence. And how does that work? Because you can't sort of be able to atomically deploy a new version of every component and have the system just work. You've got to be able to deploy incrementally. which led us to kind of the next thing that we had to do, which was service decomposition. You know, when we first shipped Team Foundation Server, it was sort of a classic on-premises three-tier application with a web server and a database and some clients. And but it was one app. You installed it together. You upgraded it all at once. You'd take the service down, you'd upgrade it, you'd bring it back up. And in the cloud, you can't do that. And in order to kind of get this, as I talked about in the release automation, this sort of ability to be constantly upgrading and executing in a very agile manner, we had to decompose the service. Because one of the problems you'll run into is if you work in this thing where the whole thing's one product and you've got a team of, 100 people working on that, if any one component's not ready to ship, well, then the whole thing's not ready to ship if it's a tightly coupled sort of monolithic service. Whereas if you sort of decouple it and you're able to sort of deploy in any order and deal with the dependency issues, then if one component's not ready to ship, fine. You don't ship that component. You go ahead and you ship everything else, and you go ahead and you keep working on that component. When it's ready, you'll ship that one. So we took this monolithic kind of one service thing, decomposed it into, I think as of today, it's about 26 different services. I have no idea how many we'll have when we're done. My guess is, within the next couple years, we'll probably have 40 or more services, because we continue to decouple more and more pieces into separate services. It's sort of called a microservice architecture. The more decoupled your service is, the more agile you can be. You have more control over your ship schedule. You have more ability for your teams to execute autonomously, etc. So kind of that's sort of three legs of our journey. The next leg was really focusing on code reuse. We started to, this was probably about 3 or so years ago, we started to really embrace open source as an incredibly important and valuable component of our software development stack. And at this point, my goodness, we have hundreds of open source components in our product. And in order to manage that, we had to really embrace package management and the ability to manage reuse of components and when things get upgraded and who's consuming what versions of those components, and develop just a whole set of practices around how we were going to share components between teams, which components needed to be at consistent versions and which didn't. So we really embraced package management, NuGet and NPM and all of the various package managers, to manage all of the shared code, both that we consume from the open source community and that we share among ourselves. In fact, we consume hundreds of open source components, but we produce over 100 of our own packages that we share among the various teams who work on Visual Studio Team Services. Sort of the next leg in our journey was around availability and resiliency. So one of the things you have to recognize is when you're running an always-on service, particularly one that you're evolving a lot, availability and resiliency of the service is incredibly important. If you've ever worked in what I call a traditional IT environment, the first thing you'll know is that the number one rule of IT is if you want to keep a piece of software stable, don't ever change it. And I spent years fighting with IT about deploying new versions of something because I had some new capability that I really wanted to get in customers' hands, but IT was like, nope, not touching it. The system is working fine, and you're just going to break it. And then they'd want to spend months evaluating the new change to figure out whether or not it was going to work in their environment and test it all kinds of different ways. Well, that's just completely at odds with the notion of delivering this constant stream of value rapidly to customers. And okay, fine, I want to deliver, but the truth is IT was right. The number one cause of failure in any complex software system is change. If you don't change everything, it's a general rule, things tend to keep working. But if you change something, you have some probability of breaking it. No matter how hard you try, you have some probability of breaking it. So the kind of next phase as you're thinking about this, okay, we're executing more rapidly, we're delivering seamlessly to production, we're breaking this thing down into lots of little components. I now have to think about, how is this system resilient? How does it deal with failure? I'm going to be shipping bugs into my production environment. And as I said, the last thing you want to do is have DevOps just be a great way to ship bugs to your customers fast. And so in addition to, and I'll talk about this in a minute, work we did on really improving our testing process, you have to recognize that test in production is a very important part of a DevOps process. You are going to ship stuff into production that is not fully tested, and you're going to use the production environment as additional validation. There's lots of ways to deal with that. One of the ways you deal with that is sort of called flighting. It's the ability to ship updates to your software to fractions of your user base. Rather than, you know, ship this update to all, you know, 500,000 or million users or whatever your user count is, rather than ship it all to them at once, you'll pick a small segment, you'll ship it to that small group, validate it, and then if it works, you'll ship it to the next group, and then the next group, and the next group, and you'll gradually introduce it to your user base. And so we've instituted a fairly involved system that we call rings. We have Ring Zero, which is our it's actually just our internal system. So it's our dog food system. It's the instance of team services that we and my team use. So everything goes there first, and we validate it, and we inevitably, almost every deployment, find some bugs that need to be patched and hot fixed before we're ready to roll it out any further. And then we have Ring 1, Ring 2, Ring 3, Ring 4 that gradually takes it out across our services through early adopters into the totality of the service. That's sort of one way to manage sort of quality in this sort of DevOps environment. Another very important thing is around managing failure. So you have to plan for failure. Systems are going to fail. Components are going to have bugs, and they're going to fail. So you need to have the system be resilient. If one thing fails, what you want to do is absolutely minimize the impact of that failure so that it only affects as small a subset of functionality as it possibly can, and that the rest of the system keeps functioning just fine, even though one little component might not be working properly right now. So we spent, Lord, probably a year or so really doing an architectural sweep through our code, instituting something we call circuit breakers. The industry calls circuit breakers. Circuit breakers are basically mechanisms that manage the interaction between services and allows a service to protect itself from a failure in another service, deal with that failure, and behave the best it can without it. Now, there are some things that turn out to be pretty hard to behave well without, like authentication. If you can't authenticate people, it's pretty hard to have your system work. Your disk drives. If you can't store data, turns out to be pretty hard. But, you know, if your user profile isn't available now, things can work pretty well. Or if the test subsystem is broken right now, your version control and your work item tracking might work just fine. So you can, there are some foundational things that are hard to protect against, but an awful lot of things, way more than you think, you can protect against, have the system be resilient and be highly available in the face of issues, bugs and infrastructure issues. The other thing related to availability and resiliency is you also need to focus on optimizing the time to correct issues. So rather than spending, you know, so much time up front exhaustively testing to make sure you've caught every issue, which of course you never have, it's a fallacy. So even when we do, even when we did spend months validating, we still would miss some things. But rather than investing so heavily in that, what you invest in is the ability to respond very quickly, to have telemetry, to notify you when there's an issue, to be able to respond very quickly to that telemetry, have immense amounts of logging and tracing to be able to identify the cause, and then a great CI/CD pipeline to be able to produce the fix and get that fix deployed rapidly across the system. And, you know, we are in the world now where issues, when they happen, are generally very isolated, and our ability to repair them is generally ours. So even if it's a software bug that requires a code fix and a rebuild, we can identify the problem, produce a patch, deploy it to the system within hours. Next sort of stage of our journey is test streamlining. So, you know, in kind of the monolithic world that we used to live in, we had these big, heavyweight, expensive functional tests that would do UI automation and would run for, you know, 6 hours or 12 hours or 14 hours or just crazy amounts of time, and would validate the product. There were several problems with that. One, you can't iterate very fast if the time to run your test suite is a day. It's just too long. It's too much friction in your validation process. Second, they're very expensive to maintain. Changes in the product break your UI functional tests. You're constantly going back and modifying them and fixing them to deal with UX changes. So that's another, in fact, it becomes an agility blocker, because what you start to realize is the cost to modify your functional tests makes you stop making UI changes, because you're like, oh crud, if I make this change, I'm going to spend 3 days just updating my UI automation, and it just costs too much, so I won't make the change. I won't make the product better because I can't afford to. So these are things you really have to think about. We've moved the vast majority of our testing. We still have a small number on the order of a few hundred functional UI automation tests, but we move the vast majority of our testing into much more of a unit test model, either literally unit testing on you know, the DLLs in a build directory, or API testing, where we have installed components, but we're just driving API tests rather than driving functional UI automation. And our test time has dropped from, you know, 10, 12, 14 hours to 15, 20 minutes, because those tests, they run way faster, they're way more maintainable, et cetera. That's sort of what we do with tests. That's kind of where we are today. In fact, I'd say we're in the middle, we're probably about 60% done with test streamlining. We're still working on that. We got more to do. I think we can get better, but we're sort of on the downward slope of addressing our test streamlining. The next leg of our journey is what I call service autonomy. So today we've decoupled the service down to 26 subservices, but we still operate from a cadence standpoint as sort of one team. All 26 services operate on the same sprint cadence. So today is sprint 100. We finished sprint 100. Every team started sprint 100 at the same time. Every team ended at the same time. All the deployments will happen over the next week. It's still this very synchronized from a schedule perspective model. I don't want to end there. I want to get to the point where each of the individual services have control over their own schedule and their own deployment plans, and I don't have to sort of coordinate across all of them. How are we going to do that? Well, the single biggest thing we have to do that is to enable all of these services to better test against the under development, or I need to be able to validate this this new version of this component that I'm working on against everybody else's stuff. Of course, everybody else is also working on a new version of their component that's not deployed yet. I need to make sure my component is works both against what's currently in production, because it might be I get into production first. I also need to validate it against the component that that my neighbor is developing, because it might make it into production first. I have no idea which component's going to make it into production in what order. So that sort of testing and validation is going to explode, or not explode, expand sort of our ring models. We're going to add a ring minus one, which some people would call an integration environment. But it's basically a production environment where we're sort of constantly testing the stuff that's currently under development against each other. And then lastly, you know, the next leg is, at least as far as I can see, and I'm sure there'll be another dozen legs after this as we sort of uncover them, is really moving to a cleaner model of what I call internal open source. One of the things that is that I think is true about Microsoft is it's a big company, and there's a lot going on, and we share among the various teams very poorly. There is so much more that we could share, and I want to take the learnings of the open source community, where everything happens in the open. Anybody can contribute. Everybody can consume. I can easily track what work you're doing, and sort of bring that into kind of the corporate culture. That's just the way all development ought to work, and we're sort of advancing team services to enable that kind of culture. So I'm going to, that's kind of our journey. I'm going to now blast real quick through through sort of some of our investments in that space in team services. So we've been working over the last year, 18 months, real hard on making our agile tooling really, really industry leading. We've done a bunch of work on our boards, our Kanban board and our Scrum board, on process customization, sort of building out all of that. We've done dashboards, and I'm going to show you some of this. I've actually, for putting together this deck, I took some screenshots just to give you an idea of how all this can come together, of how we, my team manages the work. So I literally just went into our team services account, and in fact you can see if you look in the upper left hand corner, team services, and you can tell that our internal assets don't keep up with our public name changes, because our project is still called VS Online. And this is the dashboard for the dashboards team. So I wanted to say, okay, the dashboard guys better be using the dashboard as well as anybody in the org. So I took a screenshot of their dashboard, and you can see sort of all of the information, project management information, that they're able to share, from simple things like, you know, who are the people and what are the links to all of the various websites and specs and stuff like that that you might want to look at, to sprint progress, to bugs, to pull requests that are active and need to be reviewed, to various KPIs on the status of my work, my CI build, kind of a great ability to sort of capture all of the state of what's going on in my project and make it super easy for people to see. And in fact, if you look across the top, you'll see this team has a ton of dashboards. We're looking at the overview dashboard. They have a sprint health dashboard and a my work dashboard, an engineering scorecard, and dot, 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 tons of dashboards for providing views over the information in their team. And then, so the next thing I was going to show is the a Kanban board. So this is one of my team's Kanban boards. It's actually the Agile Project Management team's Kanban board, showing sort of all of the work. They've customized it with all of the columns that they want. They've used color on the cards. They've used color on the tags. They've customized what information they want to have on the tags. And this is how they manage all of their work. Everything is stored as a work item in team services. Everything's managed on the Kanban board. In fact, I was talking to the the program manager who runs this team, and he says, I don't allow anyone to send mail on features anymore. They now have to at mention the feature work to cause a mail to get generated linked to the feature work item. I add stuff in the discussion. All of our conversation about features happens in discussion and happens on the cards and in the boards. So as I look forward, things we're going to be doing in this space, we talk about our next year as focusing on Agile at scale. So, you know, it's great that we've now got some really fantastic tooling for helping a Scrum team or a Kanban team manage their work. But how do I help an organization manage a portfolio of work across many teams? And we're working on some portfolio management capabilities. We're working on process customization. We're working on some reporting improvements. In fact, here's a mock-up of a feature that we're currently working on to give you an idea of the kind of thing that I'm talking about. This we call a delivery plan, where you can sort of see a timeline across the top showing the upcoming months. You can see down the left-hand side teams. So each of those is a Scrum team or a Kanban team planning their work. And you can see for each of the time slices what work that team has planned. So it gives me a sort of a global view, both of historically what was delivered in each of those time periods and what's planned into the future. You'll also notice, we're using sprints here, but that not every team's on the same sprint schedule. The teams at the top are on 3-week sprint schedules. The teams at the bottom are on about 5-week sprint schedules. It just depends on what works for the team. So that's an idea of the kind of thing that we're doing. We're actually going to do a lot more than this, but I wanted to sort of pique your interest in the kind of capabilities that we're thinking about. And then, yeah, so you can look at a date and time and say, okay, in the future, next sprint or sprint after next, what work are we thinking we're going to have done by then based on the backlog? So we're also working on, I talked about collaborating at code and managing the work among the development team and sharing and all of that stuff. We've been working hard on pull requests and code reviews. We recently introduced package management with NuGet, and we're getting ready to introduce NPM. So we'll have both NuGet and NPM, and we'll keep going after that, adding more package management capabilities. We recently introduced code search onto team services. In fact, we, Microsoft, rely on code search incredibly. As of January, we now have all code everywhere at Microsoft indexed by the VSTS code search engine. So for the first time ever at Microsoft, any developer at Microsoft can walk up to VSTS, do a search across all of the code, and find anything. And that is, I mean, it sounds like, but it is so revolutionary, because Microsoft has historically always been so siloed. Every team worked in their own little repo, in their own little world, and there was no real ability to share or learn from each other. Between package management and code search and the opening up of all of our repos on team services, it has been transformational for our ability to collaborate and share across the organization. So I a quick screenshot on, again, I picked a pull request code review that was happening on my team yesterday as of this morning. And just to give you a quick view of where we are, one of the next big advancements that's coming in our pull request capability is the ability to manage iterations better. So it's great. I can, submit a pull request, I can get a code review, but now I want to update the code and have you review the updates. But as a reviewer, you just want to diff and say, okay, what did you change from the last update? And did you address my comments? So I need my comments to still be aligned with your new changes, but the code's changed. How do I get the comments from the old code to line up with the new changes? All of that work to provide this clear ability to iterate and track change across the various iterations of a code review is work that's well on its way now. And then package management. So this is actually our, I picked our NuGet feed, which is the list of NuGet packages that my team produces to share among the various other teams. As I said, there's over 100 of them. And you can also see down the left-hand side, we have an incredibly large number of NuGet feeds. And then, as I say, I've picked the VS Online release, which is our release NuGet feed. Down the middle, you see the list of packages in that NuGet feed. And then on the right, you see the details of one of those packages, the common test framework that my team uses for that test work that I talked about. As I look forward, some of the work we're going to be doing in this area, we're working on Git at scale. Microsoft is a big organization and we're adopting Git. Git was not really designed for very, very large code bases. It was really designed for large numbers of small collaborating components, but that are relatively independent. We're working hard on figuring out how to scale Git to large organizations. Working hard on making sure that all of our features work across any of the platforms you develop for, whether it's iOS or Android or Java or Linux. Continuing to evolve our package management. As I said, NPM is coming soon. We're also working on symbol server support so that you can walk up to any binary produced anywhere in your organization and have it automatically be able to find the symbols and the source associated with it. So you're able to debug it without even knowing who produced it or what build it came out of or where the source is. It's kind of just auto-magical. Incredibly valuable to enabling that sharing culture. Continuous delivery, I think you had a whole presentation on this, so I won't spend a bunch of time on what we've delivered, but it's this sort of CD pipeline from build to release, deployment, and testing is incredibly important part of the DevOps process. I took a quick screenshot of some new work we're doing in our CI system around build. The main reason I took this particular screenshot is if you look in the upper right, there's this icon or button called Manage Folders. And if you've been around TFS for very long, you'll know that we've been asked for folders for build definitions for, 8 years, and we haven't gotten to it. And well, the good news is we've finally gotten to it. Folders are coming very soon. Here's our, I picked one of our team's releases. This is actually the code search team and the way they manage releases through their various environments. The entire VS Team Services deployment system is managed through Team Services Release Management. Every service has their own release pipeline and they manage their deployments. And you can actually see all of their deployments. You can see, heck, there were 3 deployments on Tuesday, 1 on Sunday, 1 on Saturday. Just incredibly, incredibly frequent deployments. And this is the prod deployment pipeline. So these are deployments going into production. That's one service deploying frequently. If you add it up to 26 services, we're deploying multiple times a day some service in Team Services. And all right, so I'm running out of time, so I'm gonna go quickly through a few of these things. I wanted to stop and talk for a second about Application Insights. You know, I think I cannot understate how important telemetry is to any DevOps process. It's important from understanding what your users are doing. That's incredibly important, and being able to adjust and adapt and be agile. But if you're going to run this constantly up, constantly evolving, constantly shipping thing, as I said, you have to be able to identify issues incredibly rapidly. You have to be able to root cause those issues, and you have to be able to get get fixes and get them deployed. And we live and die by our application insights, by our ability to get that telemetry. And you know, one of the ones I wrote a blog post about recently was a new application insights analytics that's based on this capability, this internal thing we call Cousteau, which is basically a time series database that takes log messages and allows you to run arbitrary queries over them. That thing is amazing. I mean, it is incredible. And engineers on my team live and die by it. And I've had people say to me, like, if you took Cousteau away from me, I don't know how I would get my job done. It is so fundamental. We log tons of stuff. Like, if we look at all of the services that put data into Cousteau, just Microsoft services, we are now logging about 700 terabytes a day, 700 terabytes a day of log information into Cousteau. And Cousteau is able to take all that data and provide real-time or near real-time query ability over it and help us understand anything in any component, in any system, what's going wrong, where did it happen, when did it happen, who did it happen to, what were the interactions, isolate the problem, and get it fixed. This is an unbelievably important part of any DevOps process. And I'll skip that. And then sort of the last area that we're investing pretty hard in is, the cloud is still, I think, it's still early in adoption. There's still a lot of organizations nervous about the cloud and, you know, what does it mean? And is it secure? And is it safe? And is it reliable? And that continues to be a big investment for us, is really making sure we're able to assure people your data is safe, it's in your control. We've been focused on compliance and certification and stuff like that. And that's it. So that's a little bit about our journey and sort of what I think are the incredibly important parts to a good DevOps process. You can go learn more on visualstudio.com. In fact, if you go to this last URL here, service news, the visualstudio.com release archive, you'll actually be able to see our history of all of the value we delivered. In every sprint, we're delivering more and more stuff. In every sprint, we get better. So every sprint delivers more stuff than the sprint we delivered before. And it's amazing sort of to look back over the years and see how we've moved from this much more sort of monolithic, slow release process to this very agile release process. My very last thing, I was asked to ask a question, which you can tweet an answer to, and the winner gets a prize. So the question is this: in what year did we first ship what is now called Visual Studio Team Services? It wasn't called Visual Studio Team Services back then. We've sadly gone through a few name changes. But what year was the first year that we shipped it? So tweet that. What the handle are they supposed to tweet to?
So if you send your tweets to TechDays UK, make sure you include the TechDays hashtag. And we are pretty much, I'm afraid, out of time, Brian. But
yep.
That was a really, really great run through. I was sitting on the edge of my seat really enjoying that. Thanks very much for joining us this afternoon. It's been really appreciated.
All right. Thank you very much.
And as we wrap the day, I just want to say a big thanks to you, the audience, for watching. You can see that I've been joined by my compadre, Mr. Fryer. Only our own mothers can tell us apart. people are throwing penguins at me.
I'm
hiding down the side here, a whole bunch of guys that we want to say thanks to.
Thank you. We're out of here. Thank you. You've been great.